So I'm Patrick Ohle. I work for Intel on one particular aspect of the Tizen stack in IVI. So my official title is actually architect for the social and content domain in Tizen. In practice, I'm sharing that responsibility with someone from Samsung, and my actual hands-on work is more related to what we do in IVI with Tizen. And for all the PIM data, the contacts, calendars, things that you normally have on the phone, we focus on contacts because that was seen as the most important one that we need to cover in IVI. So that's what the talk is going to be about. It's a very specific talk about one component. So you will get some information about how to install this software, what to do with it. And I'm trying to put it into a context of what is going on in the IVI industry. So in that sense, it's somewhere between very low-level hacking and the high-level architecture talks that you've seen here at the conference. So I'm going to start with some motivation for why we are doing it this way, what we are trying to achieve, the use cases, and then I'm going to describe specific components that we are reusing from upstream open source projects, more specifically the Evolution Data Server, Sync Evolution, a project that I have started in a sense. I started working on that in my spare time before working on it for Intel, and some other open source projects done by other groups, other people. And I'm going to conclude the talk with some demonstration, perhaps, if time allows, and specific steps that you can reproduce, taking the Nook, for example, installing the latest Tizen common image on it, and installing the software, running some commands to reproduce this functionality on your own hardware. It's not going to be as fancy as this demo that we just saw from Joe, remote controlling a car. But on the other hand, the advantage is that you can actually do it with your own hardware. You don't need to buy a car. So what is an IVI head unit really doing with contacts? And why do we need anything at all in the head unit? Now, there are two different camps here, in the IVI industry. Some of them, and that involves many car manufacturers, see the head unit as the intelligent part of a car where you actually control your car, your other devices, and you combine all of that in the head unit and do more things than you can do with just your phone. That involves writing software for the head unit that is intelligent, that knows to do how to communicate. The other camp is more or less treating the head unit as a dump display device, and they see all the intelligence being on the consumer electronic device that uses that display. Miracast falls into that camp. Now, what I'm describing is firmly in the first part of this split here. It's trying to build intelligent software on the head unit that knows how to talk with multiple phones, perhaps even at the same time, and implements certain use cases itself directly in the car. The advantage of that approach is that the UI becomes a lot more responsive. You can actually do things on the car hardware itself, like when you get a phone call coming from phone via Bluetooth, you get just the caller ID, and then on the head unit, you want to display a photo. That's depending on a fast caller ID lookup, matching this caller ID, which is typically a fully formed phone number with country code and everything, against what you have in your address book. So it is a bit more complex than just a text match. And by doing it on the head unit, we can actually employ advanced techniques that I'm going to describe later. And we can cache photo data, for example, from the address book on the phone, and readily display a local image that we already have on the car. Then you might want to dial from the car and use your phone just to handle the actual communication with the phone network. Then you have a local UI that allows you to browse contacts and then take the phone number from the address book and make a call. You might also use the address information that you have for your contacts and start a navigation to get to a friend's place. Things like that depend on having the data on the head unit, where you also have the navigation software running, for example. And then the key to, you might imagine doing these things that I just described with just one phone displaying a UI on the head unit. What is not possible with that mirroring approach is to actually take data from more than one phone. So imagine the situation that you have a driver in a car and also a passenger, and they both agree to have the data available in the head unit. Then when they want to make a call, they want to see one unified address book of their contacts, and then make a choice among those superset of data that they have on their phones. And that's only possible on a device that actually knows about both phones and both address books. So one key use case for this intelligent UI was that it must have a unified address book. And for reasons that have to do with how data gets enabled on the head unit, basically we are thinking of having only the data enabled of the phones that are actually in the car, for example. So you might have rapid changes of what data goes into that unified address book, depending on who's currently in the car. So this is very dynamic, and this has led to a certain design that I'm going to describe here. And then, of course, we have connected cars with their own internet connectivity. So we end up with situations where you want to connect with a certain cloud. Perhaps you have your data in Google Contacts, or you are an Apple user and you're using the iCloud, then it's very natural that you also want to have access to that contact data in your car, perhaps without going through the phone. And this direct synchronization is something that we have recently added, so it's also in the feature set that we are implementing in Tizen IVI. For Google Contacts, that's the primary target, but iCloud is certainly also possible. Enterprise, that's more related to what Microsoft is doing. That's a different protocol, but it could also be added. These are certainly the things that came up when we discussed these features. So let's look at specific components. When we looked at all these requirements sometime back last year, we figured that what we got from Tizen Mobile was only doing partial implementation of what we needed. The contact service that you have on the phone, it has a concept of unifying contacts, but it's fairly static. You can have multiple address books and you can link contacts, but it doesn't know how to do this dynamic reconfiguration. We don't have any sync solution in Tizen Mobile, nothing in the open source at least. And therefore, we looked at other alternatives. Because it was a small team doing the work, we also tried to reuse as much as possible existing open source projects. So we came up with what we call the GNOME PIM stack in Tizen IVI. It's taking the Evolution Data Server, which is another PIM storage solution. It does contacts and calendars. For one, the part that we are using is contacts, of course. And it's based on SQLite for local storage. Then LibPhoneNumber, a Google project. They are using it in Android and also in the web interfaces to parse phone numbers with full semantics. So they can take a number, figure out which country it is in, split it up into the individual components. That's important when you have fuzzy data and try to make some sense out of it and actually compare it. And then for the unified address book, I described this dynamic thing, and our conclusion was that it's better to do that in memory instead of keeping multiple different unified address books on disk. Consider the case where you have 5 or 10 different phones connected to the same car, perhaps. If you try to pre-compute all possible combinations of these phones, it quickly gets out of hand. So we opted to do it in memory instead. And of course, there's Sync Evolution, my pet project, the one that I work on most. That does the phone synchronization using PBAP, because that's the one protocol that commonly today is supported by phones, and also cloud synchronization. When working on these IVI features, we added what we call the IVI PIM Manager DBus API. That is a new API of a permanently running process that grants access to this unified address book. And the last component is Plusi OBXD. It implements the actual phone book access protocol on the side of a car. We always need a corresponding implementation on the device that we talk to, but that's typically provided on iOS, Android, BlackBerry. So that's the one protocol that typically works today. It has some limitations. It's certainly not as useful for synchronization purposes as SyncML used to be. So in that sense, it's a step backwards, but that's just the way how it goes. We have to take what we can get from a phone manufacturer and what the phone OS actually grants us access to. The whole idea, of course, here is that we don't force the driver to install a specific app. It's supposed to work out of a box with any kind of phone that you bring into the car. That's one of the requirements here. Otherwise, we could, of course, do our own app on the phone and use whatever protocol we want to get at the data. But that was seen as not user-friendly enough, so we tried to do it with the existing protocols. Now, if you're thinking about using that, some more information about these components. It's all LGPL or more liberal, so there's no problem linking it against proprietary code. Although it's called the GNOME PIM stack, it actually works without GTK. So you can just put, you need just a set of libraries that I'm listing here. And for the new feature, we are also taking advantage of some other thing that Intel does, which is called GSSO, single sign-on. I'm going to talk more about that later, but that's what is giving us the login into Google, for example. And another common feature in all of these implementations is that it is locale aware, of course. And that means sorting of strings is done with ICU. Phone number parsing is also locale aware. It knows in which country you are, at least it has some default for it, and it does parsing accordingly. For Pinyin in China, we have a special implemented a special case that is not the default in ICU, which mixes the Western names with the Chinese names based on the transliteration of the Chinese characters into English. That seems to be more common nowadays in China. And it's not what you get from ICU by default, but it's easy to implement as an additional transformation step before sorting. And then we use systemd to have a global change of a locale. So let's look at some more specific features and what we added as part of the development work. We looked at Evolution Data Server very early when it was what it had been for years, essentially, since it was created for a desktop system. At that time, it consisted of an abstract API for contact and calendars, which is useful, might even be useful for us at some point. And it had a specific local storage engine using a combination of BerkeleyDB for historic reasons and SQLite for indexes. So that was not optimal, so we worked with a company to enhance that. And the result is what we have today. It's important to point out here that all of this work was done in cooperation with Upstream. So although we started in the Evolution Data Server 3.6 timeframe, and since then multiple versions have been released, today it's possible to take the Upstream version and have all of these features with one minor exception, which we haven't upstreamed yet, but we'll do at some point. So it's very easy to just follow Upstream without having to maintain a vendor branch, for example, in Tizen. So the key differences, the things that we added to Evolution Data Server to make it more suitable for an embedded environment was changing the database layout and moving everything into SQLite. Then we have an easy way with an atomic operation to add new data and update the indices at the same time. It's faster too. This is done for the text-based properties. The photo data, that can be potentially large. It's stripped out of a contact, but still managed by the database. So we can add a photo to a contact, and when we delete the contact, the photo also gets automatically removed. But when working with the contact data, we actually have access to the actual photo file, the JPEG file, on disk, and can read it, normally via the file system instead of going through the Evolution data server. Then we have lib phone number support. We have regular expressions if you want to do advanced things like a keypad search. We optimize performance to take out the IPC communication as much as possible. So reading this SQLite database is actually possible directly in the process which needs to use the data. It doesn't go through any kind of daemon. It just takes the SQLite database with the help of the EDS libraries and reads from the database directly. Writing, for concurrency reasons, goes through the daemon. And that is possible concurrently with reading, thanks to SQLite database support for that. Then, to implement a really comprehensive UI, as you would be used to and what you would expect from, say, on a phone, we have added things like quick searches, sorted results, and browsing through the context, like you would on Android. And finally, because this has to be local, it has to work in different countries with perhaps non-ASCII character bases, we also have an alphabetic index that is not limited to A to Z, but in fact knows about what is used in the country. Here's some examples of these two features. The first one is the cursor. We call it windowed searching. You basically tell the library to give you N contacts starting at a certain position. That might be the start of the address book, but you can also progressively move forward or jump to a certain position. And you get a certain result back, and then you iterate through the result by continuing where you left off. And this is not just some index in the database, but it's the actual position based on the name or what you are searching on or sorting on. So if a database changes while you are stepping through, you still get a consistent view. You don't jump suddenly drop back to some completely random position. You just basically redo with your search, and some contacts might get added, some contacts might be gone, but you're still looking at the same part of your address book. And then the alphabetic index, that is again exposing a feature that we get from ICU. We have the most common letters in a certain region, and that's determining the index, and then we get the possibility to jump to logical positions in your address book. It doesn't make sense for the user if you number your contacts, for example. If you tell him you can jump to contact number 100 out of 1,000, he doesn't know where he's going to end up. So it's not very useful to jump by index. It's more likely that he wants to go to my contact starting with M, for example, and that's what we provide. And then the combination with Sync Evolution and folks, that's giving us the unified address book. For historic reasons, it uses a slightly different search and viewing model, but it's on the to-do list to change that and to make it similar to what we get from EDS with this windowed searching. The important part here is that we really try to minimize disk writes. That's another requirement in IVI, where your flash is one of these things that you really need to be careful with, because it might wear out, and it's not going to be replaced as quickly as on your mobile phone, because the car is going to be in use much longer than a mobile phone. And therefore, we are very conservative about what we do with flash and try to minimize writes, because that's what wears out the flash. So the unified address book avoids that. It just takes the existing data and unifies in memory and never writes that back. It is, on the downside, also a performance issue, but we have some special cases to minimize the effect of that. The other thing that Sync Evolution implements in combination with OBEXD, that's the syncing with a phone. So the use case is that you take your phone, you pair it with a head unit, you enable syncing on the head unit, and then you at some point expect the head unit to have a cache of your address book on the phone. This works by taking a full dump of the phone's address book. Unfortunately, PBAP doesn't really support incremental syncing, so it always has to start with taking a full download and then trying to figure out most as intelligently as possible what changes have happened on the phone since the last sync. And then you can apply those local these changes to the local cache. Again, that's done to minimize flash wear out. There are additional use cases when you look at the transfer rate of Bluetooth. It's not that great. So if you have a large address book and many photos, it can easily take minutes or, well, in some extreme cases, it might take longer to download your address book than you are in the car, than you are driving. So for that, we have a special mode where we are asking the phone for just the contact data without the photos. That's typically a lot faster because it's less data. We update the local database with that information. So if you have a new contact with a new phone number, you get that into the car more quickly when using that incremental mode. And then later, when we keep driving and we're still connected, we also add new photos. And the processing happens while downloading. So it's a pipeline mode in a way where we trigger the download and then already start the sync in parallel and do the processing as soon as the data comes in from the phone. And that, to combine with what ADS gives us, allows the UI, for example, to show already some live view of the data as it comes in. The goal here in terms of performance is to be always as fast as the actual Bluetooth transfer. And that's what we are currently achieving. So the processing has to be quick, but it currently is. Now that's an architecture diagram showing you some of the components of Sync Evolution doing this work. And it's actually the same architecture that we are using for Bluetooth transfers and for cloud synchronization. It's just that we have different backends giving us the data, and we have some additional logic for the PBAP special cases that it's one way instead of two way, for example, and that we do have to do this matching of existing data with incoming data from the phone. Now, I promised you that this will be a more practical and hands-on oriented talk. So I'd like to give you some information about how to use the software on an actual Tizen device, if it's like the Nook. The latest update of Sync Evolution is in Tizen Common at the moment, and it adds the cloud synchronization. So I'm going to spend some time describing how to set up that part. The older version of Sync Evolution already supported PBAP for a while, and if you were following the news, you might have also seen that Intel announced an IVI platform, a real hardware device with combined software. That's where the older version of Sync Evolution and this PIM stack is also deployed. So there is an actual product from Intel using this technology, at least for PBAP. Cloud is, as I said, is a new feature that's not yet used anywhere, not released yet. But you can still get it from Tizen Common and start using it today. So the PIM stack consists of multiple components, and you basically can pick and choose what you want to use. For core syncing and for core storage, that's the Sync Evolution ebook backend. That installing that with Zipper on a device also pulls in the core Sync Evolution, and you need the corresponding Evolution data server component as the storage and the daemon that actually is handling the data. Then, if you want to do PBAP, you need some additional components, OBXD. I'm listing here the components, the commands to install them. If some of these components will already be on some of your images, so it will just skip those and just add the ones that are missing. But this is what gets you started if you don't have a complete set already. So OBXD is typically installed. BlueZ test is not. It's needed because we don't have a UI for all of this functionality. So you have to fall back to the command line to do some things with it. Sync Evolution, PBAP, that's the other backend. Ebook is for EDS. PBAP is the one that talks to phones. And finally, for card dev, we have yet another Sync Evolution backend, and that's the dev or web dev backend. I'm talking about card dev here in the presentation, but that same backend also can handle CalDev. It's just not a feature that we officially test and support in IVI. But the upstream Sync Evolution project certainly does, and it's available on desktops. People are using it. And that's where most of its functionality actually gets tested before it ends up in Tizen. So for card dev, we need these GSSO components. Unfortunately, we figured out fairly late that we are no longer able to offer the UI that you need to do the OAuth authentication. It's part of this transition to Crosswork, and we will add it back at some point. There is a bug number here where you can find more information about the current status. At the moment, this zip install will fail for sign-on UI EFL because we just don't have it in common. But there are workarounds. You can use your plain username password at the moment, at least. And finally, if you want to have some examples for the PIM manager, that's packaged in the latest Sync Evolution as another test package. So this is what you would do to do the PBAP caching or to get started with Bluetooth pairing at all in Tizen Common. All of these commands, except for SIPA, run in a normal user session. So it's not privileged in any way. You just log in or you start it in a Western shell, for example, when you have something graphical. If you log in via SSH, be careful. You need to set up some environment variables to have a debug session active. You need to be the normal user. So first thing, pairing with a phone. That's done with this Bluetooth test tool, Bluetooth control. There are more information about that on the Tizen wiki. But this is for gist of it, what you need to do. And then there is this Python test script, which uses the PIM manager API to set up a phone as a peer, create a local address book, configure that whole setup, then it does a one-time sync with that phone. So it gets your actual data. And it's also reporting what progress we are making. Then we can verify with the Sync Evolution command line tool that we actually have a functional connection to the device, for example. So in the previous command, I'm already assuming that syncing with the phone works. If somehow it doesn't, you can do individual operations manually, like exporting your phone's address book to standard out, and all you need to tell it is what backend in Sync Evolution you want to use and where the device is. That's called database here in this case because it really is one instance of an address book that happens to be on a remote phone. The same export operation also works for EDS. So the Sync Evolution command line can be useful to work with multiple protocols in a coherent way. For EDS, we can have multiple databases. So we can print them, list them, and we can access individual items. We can also manipulate them, export them, import them, update our individual contacts. It's very useful for testing. And the unified address book, that's another PIM manager feature, so we need to write some Python code or some C++ code, whatever you want to use to access the debug service. And we have one instance of a unified address book on the device or for this user, and we can configure which address books are active in it. In this case here, the empty string stands for the system address book, which we can have in EDS. And this cached data from this particular phone, which has a unique name. And then there is a search syntax that allows us to run queries against that address book. The empty square bracket stands for just give me all data, no limitations, just do a whole dump. And read all means we are also getting the data and not just a list of contacts. There's a corresponding dbus API description, and I'm going to show you the link to that later on. Now, moving on to the cloud synchronization. Well, we focused on Google Contacts first because it is based, it has an fairly open protocol. It's based on card dev. That's the one that Google supports today. They also had SyncML support. They had ActiveSync support, and both were supported by Sync Evolution, but Google has turned off support for that. So it's basically discontinued. And CardDev is the one protocol that they still support today for third-party applications. So what I'm describing here is the workaround that we currently need to do, and this workaround is possible because Google still supports plain username password authentication. But they have already announced that they are going to discontinue that support, and they expect clients to use OAuth authentication instead in the future. But they haven't actually turned it off, so we can still use it. It's just a matter of, well, yeah, not knowing how long that will be possible. For debugging, it's okay. Long term, we need to get OAuth working. I'm not going into the details here, or perhaps perhaps I should say a few words about how synchronization really works in SyncEvolution. You are combining two different sides. You are combining the side that gives you access to the data remotely and to the local storage. You hook up these two configurations, basically. Both can be used independently to access items. So you can do this print items operation on the CARTEV side and on the local side. And then you set up a sync that tells SyncEvolution that you really want to synchronize these two databases, one being the CARTEV address book, the other side being the local storage. And then when you run the sync, it runs the sync session internally where it detects changes on the CARTEV side, applies them locally, and vice versa. So the cloud synchronization actually is a two-way sync. You can make changes locally and have that change be transmitted back to Google at some later point in time. That's unfortunately not possible with PBAR because it's a read-only protocol. And following these commands, you will get your Google data into your head unit or your desktop. So the same instructions also work on a normal Linux desktop system if you install SyncEvolution from syncevolution.org, for example. Now it gets a bit more complicated, and I'm not expecting you to remember this command line instruction here. I'm putting it here as a documentation thing. Single sign-on is typically expected to be used with some kind of account management. So you configure a Google service provider, and you configure how to talk to the Google service in some configuration files. And then in an application like SyncEvolution, you don't need to know these details. We just say, yes, I want to use OAuth with Google, and you don't need to specify all these details. Unfortunately, we don't have such a component in Tizen at the moment. We just have the sign-on part, the one that does the OAuth authentication. So we have to provide all of these details actually on the SyncEvolution command line. It's certainly not user-friendly, but it's not supposed to be. It's just a debugging tool in a way. So it's enough to get started using these components. The end user will never see such a string here. That's supposed to be hidden in some kind of UI. For OAuth, I need to point out one more thing. The key difference compared to plain username password is that the client has to be registered with Google. So you go to the Google website, you register as a developer, you activate the CARTEV protocol in the client RP console, and you get more or less secret string that only you are supposed to use. Now, there's no way how we can keep that string secret in an open source distribution of SyncEvolution. So we have registered SyncEvolution as one client, and the strings that I'm giving here are for that particular client. A real product should better start talking to Google about using the CARTEV service, get registered, perhaps have some agreement with Google about numbers of requests per day that you are going to use on the service. But for debugging, you're free to use these strings here. So 5 more minutes left. I'm giving these talks also at other open source conferences, and typically the goal is to get some other people interested in the technology, and because these are upstream projects that are also having a useful application outside of Tizen, I'm typically pointing to things that people could be doing with this technology in areas that are more interesting to them, perhaps, than IBI. Now, we are at a Tizen conference, so I'm less concerned about KDE and GTK support, for example, although upstream, that certainly is relevant. More important for us is what we are currently doing, so what you can expect from the next generation of Tizen syncing. That is some enhancements in the PBAP backend. I alluded to the problem of having a transfer time that is larger than your driving time. In that case, you will never actually really finish this whole sync. So we need to work on that and have some way of getting at least the address book in chunks to make progress with syncing, even though the sync itself never really finishes. And that's what this transfer in chunks is about. Now, the other thing is that we hope that the next version of PBAP will have better support for incremental syncing, where we can just get changes without downloading everything. That's something we need to look at, and hopefully sometime next year we will also have actual phones implementing this version of PBAP. I already mentioned the PIM manager and its API, so it's a natural step to make it similar to what we get in EDS. So depending on what you are using, you will have a similar API, one that goes to the unified address book and one that goes directly to the database. Some more future ideas that we are not currently actively working on is calendar support. That would be nice to have. Cloud syncing, that's feasible. Sync Evolution supports it. With phones, it's harder because the protocol to get at calendar data is still in the design phase and it's not currently implemented by phones. So without this third-party application that we could install for a phone, we can't do much with phones out of the box at the moment. And then we have also privacy implications, perhaps, if a user chooses to not cache the contact data on the head unit. Then it would be nice to have the same API if the data is local and if it's still on the phone. Perhaps it will be slower to read the address or to access on search, and it perhaps will give us different results, but we could do it via PBAP live without caching. And it would be nice to have that as a very transparent fallback for applications, but that's not currently planned. And here are the references that I promised. Again, these slides will be on the Tizen.org website, I think, at some point. And then you can just follow those links, download the presentation, follow the links. It has documentation about this PIM Manager API, about the different components, PBAP, WebDev. Evolution Data Server also has its own website with an API. And there are these other projects that are part of this stack. And with that, I'd like to would take questions as much as we still have time left. And thank you for your attention.